We're going to talk about children's participation in schools. And we want to think about the opportunities that children have for participation above and beyond just being asked for their views and their expressions of interest, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
So we think about Article 12 as concerned with the politics of children as democratic citizens. And importantly, we suggest that the seriousness with which children's participation is taken in schools says something about the seriousness with which wider democratic citizenship is taken of a population as a whole within an entity. So today, Perpetua and I are going to give you three examples from our own research conducted in classrooms in England, in different contexts, which are all connected with ideas of children joining in, taking part, and being heard. Importantly, this isn't just about children being heard in a particular moment when their opinions are asked for particularly. But it's about, isn't it, Perpetua, everyday moments and the way in which adults might take the time to notice when children actually don't agree with them or actually are doing things differently. So what Perpetua and I are going to do is we're going to pose a question linked to each example we're going to give from our research. And each example is about the politics of participation. And what we suggest you do is to think about the example from our research and think about how it might apply or not to your own context in school or to your own everyday experiences, whether when you were a child or now as an adult.
So the first question is, does inclusion always require children to fit in with existing ways of doing things? And to think about this, I'd like to talk about six-year-old Jake, whose family has low income. And Jake finds schoolwork hard to do. Yeah. So one day I was watching and Jake was engaged in a maths group activity with himself and a few other children and a teacher. And in this activity, they had to measure using pots of porridge, dry porridge oats, to see which of the pots had the largest capacity. And the children took it in turns to measure the pots of porridge into a larger bowl. Now each child had to sit waiting patiently to do the task, but for Jake this was really quite hard. Jake was very keen to touch the porridge, even to eat the porridge, and he wasn't allowed to do that, and he kept being told he wasn't allowed to do it, and was finally reprimanded and said, "You have to stop playing with the porridge and you need to listen." In the English classroom for six-year-olds, children are expected to be mostly quiet and silent and to do what they're instructed.
Yeah.
So when children engage in these more playful or sensory ways, they can often be heard as noise rather than having a voice.
Yes.
But I think what Jake's actions highlight here is that he's critical of the classroom conditions that mean that he only engages in the world and understands the world in this very narrow, prescribed way. So going back to our original question, in this example, inclusion suggests that Jake must fit into the normal ways that measuring is taught.
Yes.
So what is wrong is Jake, not the activity.
So the second question that Perpetua and I have been asking ourselves is about how adults can look beyond some challenging behaviours that some children present to notice their participation. So to do that, I'm going to tell you about Maya, Maya is 9 years old. She's mixed race. And she's large, physically large for her age. And she's has some mobility challenges. And we've noticed that she can get easily frustrated. And often this presents itself in the classroom as what the teacher might describe as Maya's anger issues. Now, on this particular occasion, Maya is in the playground. She's playing in the playground and she's been trained, as many of her classmates have, by a children's participation charity to take part and join in. And actually, Maya is doing this really very well indeed. Maya is leading a game. She's managed to get those children she's playing with to suggest the game, to take part. Maya knows the rules really well, and she's managing to enforce them, and people are really working with her very respectfully. So as Maya's playing, I'm standing with the adult supervisor, and we both notice Maya. And the adult supervisor comments on her enthusiasm. And I say to him, actually, I've really impressed with the way that I've seen Maya playing in the playground and joining in and taking part and leading groups of children in this way. In other words, really exhibiting many of the attributes of everyday participation that we might like to see going on. But the teacher, who's standing in the playground, looks a little bit less sure than me and says, yes, but we do have to remember nonetheless that Maya has anger management issues and these need to be fixed. So returning to the question, this rather blocks for Maya the opportunity of ever being taken seriously as a good democratic citizen, in school at least.
So the third question that we've got is, what desires and concerns might children convey even in their silences? And so one of the children in the research, Anna, was particularly quiet in the classroom. She is highly conforming. She's often seen sitting upright with her finger on her mouth. And she sees herself as a child who is doing well in school, gets answers right a lot of the time, and that she likes to do what teachers say. I become very interested in the sort of silence in the classroom and the lack of how some children can sound and voice. So I ask the children to describe what sounds they hear in the classroom. And Anna draws a teacher and says it's the teacher telling us what to do. So I also ask Anna to make the sound that she hears in the classroom, and she makes a breathing sound. And she explains to me that this is when children are breathing, when they're sitting on the classroom carpet listening to the teacher.
Right.
And I ask her, what does that feel like, that breathing? And she just says quietly, breathing. And I try and probe a bit more about her feelings and her experience of being in that space. And she quietly sort of says very little, conveys very little of herself. So Anna has a right not to respond, in line with Article 12 in the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And I must respect that as well. But what I'm also sort of drawn to is, what might it be in this context that prevents Anna from actually voicing something of herself?
To you.
To me, yeah. So this is quite a complicated example, because we're left thinking, well, what is Anna communicating in her silence and by not saying something? Anna is performing beautifully the good student. She's quiet. She sits well. Some of the other children are sort of making pretend dying noises and having quite a laugh. Anna is not engaging in that kind of behavior. So she's performing the good student, and that includes being quiet. And I also noticed that where she avoids giving something is in answer to my questions, where there isn't really a clear clue to what the answer is.
Okay.
So thinking about our research in the whole, Rebecca,
yeah,
across the different schools, they were different, but one of the schools very much placed children's participation at its heart, didn't it, in its school policies.
Yeah.
And even in that context, it was hard for children to be heard and to take part and join in.
On some occasions, most certainly, yeah.
So in the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, mm-hmm. it includes protection rights as well as participation yes. rights. And there can often be a tension between balancing those two.
You mean between participation and between protection?
Yes.
Yep.
And in a school context, protection is very much includes ensuring children learn the skills and knowledge that's been decided by adults.
Absolutely.
And so that, from what we saw, can mean that Article 12 gets slightly demoted, more or less in different contexts and at different times, so that it's actually very hard for children to be heard or to notice and attend to what they're actually telling us, particularly if it doesn't fit what we think should happen.
Absolutely.
I think it's important to remind ourselves how in the Convention, Article 12 actually underpins all protection rights. So when we're engaged in the protection of children, we still must very much attend to what they're showing us or telling us.
Absolutely.